Welcome back, everybody, to another rambling rendition of First Ring Daily Live on a Friday.
I'm sure we could rein this one in if we had to.
I feel like we do that all the time. That's
delicious.
What is it?
Is that your... It's a poor person water. I made it myself.
Poor person water? Did you collect it from the rain?
Yeah. No, I poured it out of the tap, and then I used that mystery machine to turn it into sparkling water.
Oh.
Yeah. I know. Sorry.
I mean, you could just lick a piece of coal and then drink some water, and you get the same amount of carbon, I would think. But
you like crispy bacon, dude. You know, we all have these weird things.
Whoa.
That are just wrong.
Whoa.
Your problem is you've never had good bacon, so you think you have to extra crisp it because you eat the garbage out of the supermarket. It's okay. Sorry, was that not in the show notes?
Crispy bacon is way of life, Paul. Uh-huh. I'll have you know I grew up with my father slaving out on the deck. Actually, the way I grew up eating bacon was my father would put bacon on the grill, and he had a iron, and he would just set it on it, and it would cook it real quick, but it would crisp it, and so that's why I like crispy bacon.
Because it's a childhood thing. Well, it's probably why you like chicken McNuggets, too, you know?
Hey.
That's fine.
My kid eats the Dino Nuggets, and every time we buy these, I think of Raf, because Raf at one point tweeted that Dino Nuggets are the best nuggets, and that's whatever.
Supermarket chicken nuggets were just put on a list of the five worst things you can give to children.
Fantastic. My kid is doomed?
Yep.
It's not surprising.
Yeah, well, it's processed food, you know, whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's... Paul, are you telling me the nugget doesn't come organically in a dino shape? What?
Show me on a map of the chicken's body where the nugget part is. Honestly, when they first did nuggets, they actually did it right because it was just the leftover parts.
Yeah.
And that's actually the best part of the chicken.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff. Like all white meat is like the blandest, most terrible part of the chicken. Mm. Oh, well.
Anyways. I was looking for something. Nope, can't find 19H2 anywhere, Paul.
Yeah, well, if you keep looking, you're gonna find it eventually.
This is Microsoft went into their lab and said, you know what, two public builds or strings of Windows 10 isn't enough. Why don't we do three? And here we are.
Well, you know, the last two versions of Windows 10 went so well, they were like, let's just do three at a time now. Yeah, which, you know, honestly, like, you could ask anyone in the world. Like, this is what happened last year to Windows 10. What should they do this year? And work on three builds or three versions of Windows simultaneously is not words that anyone would ever utter.
Yeah.
So I give them a little credit for that. It's crazy. I do like the crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But as a Windows 10 fan, as a longtime Windows user, an advocate even, I'm a little nervous about this.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So I've got two theories, and both of them are probably wrong. But theory number one is that they've got some features coming in 19H2 that they're going to announce at build, and they know that if they start putting out the test builds now, people will uncover them. Because if you look at their blog post, they say late spring, which spring doesn't start until March 20th, or later in the spring. So earliest we're looking at is March 20th. If not later, build is in May.
It could be June. Late spring is June.
Yeah. Later in the spring, who knows?
Yeah.
My other theory, that's theory number one, is that maybe they are shifting towards a more a different model for the two updates per year. And this one might be a little bit more sound. It could be that new features are introduced in the spring releases only.
Yeah.
And 19 in the fall releases, because remember, these are the builds that are released and supported for 30 months for the enterprise or fall only, are just going to be fixes, patches, and stability releases. And so maybe the problem with that theory, and I don't know why that would stop them from releasing them now. Because if there's nothing in there, maybe they want to clarify that or whatever. But maybe their logic is that, hey, we want everyone on 20H1 because that's where we're going to introduce new features, and we want them tested for as long as possible. And the fall releases are just going to be patches and that's it. Yeah. No new features. I think that theory makes a little bit more sense. But yeah,
so many things fly through my mind as you say these words. And it's first of all, the second theory that you had, Mary Jo contacted me this morning and said, you know, what do you think of this? People throwing this idea around. And mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, you know, Mary Jo has been a longtime proponent of the R2 model, which is what you're describing. Alternate between major and minor releases, with the major releases being in the spring. And yeah, sure. Other people have kind of said, you know, maybe what you need to do is one update a year at max and just skip 19.8. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's too much. And so, you know, my personal advice to Microsoft, which they are ignoring, is to skip 19H2, mm-hmm. Push 19H1 back a couple months, mid-year is fine. And then put everything up and, you know, whatever this 20H1 thing is going to be, and that's fine. But you know, aside from the obvious stuff that comes to the forefront when you are, you know, confronted by the terribleness of these three things happening at once, mm-hmm. There's also another issue, which is communication. And this is something that will come up as we do the commentary from your book, because a big part of the Surface story is the Windows 8 story, is the mm-hmm. Steven Sinofsky story, is the team that made those versions of Windows. Mm-hmm. And their big thing was secrecy. And every, you know, this is true of so many things, but everything is a reaction to what happened in the past. You know, the secrecy stuff from Steven Sinofsky was a reaction to the overt openness of the previous regime, you know, where they had promised all this stuff from Longhorn and never delivered any of it. And they were like, we're never going to do that again. When Terry Myerson came in after Sinofsky, the first thing he did was we're cutting out all the secrecy stuff. We are going to develop Windows in the open, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Myerson, not perfect. He had problems with math, among other things, but, right? But I have to say the one thing that he got directly right was this rejection of the secrecy stuff. It's important, not just to us as individuals, because we kind of want to know what's going on, mm-hmm. but most of Microsoft's Windows revenues come from big businesses. They need to know what Microsoft's doing. Transparency is important. And, you know, I got to say, the one thing that's been disappointing over the past several years is the inability of people in what I'll call PR roles to communicate effectively with the public. And you see this in the Insider program a lot. It's just terrible. It's come up again and again and again. Remember the fiasco where, okay, finally we're going to put this stuff in the feedback hub and you can find out more about it. It's like, guys, I'm a journalist. I'm not running the next version of Windows 10 with a feedback hub. I need to be able to see what this thing is. You can't hide information somewhere. They've done a lot of stupid stuff like that. But what I've seen over the past week, especially, is something that I would call a Steven Sinofsky type veil of secrecy. So you remember last week they had this build of the current version of Windows 10, the one that's coming next, that had unspecified gaming improvements. And to get people to test this thing, whatever it is, they gave out a free game to some limited number of people. And all they wanted you to do was install it and have fun playing it. But what they wanted to know was how well, particularly around what happened when you installed it and started playing. Mm-hmm. Never explained what they were doing. They're just being secretive about it. It's like, we're gonna secretly, you know, get telemetry and then whatever feedback you provide. That rubbed me the wrong way. If you look at what they said this week, yesterday I think it was, about 20H1, that 20H1, that phrase or whatever word, appears twice in the blog post. It has never been uttered by anyone at Microsoft ever before. It comes with no context whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And all they said was, yeah, some of the things require more testing, so we're going to start doing this now.
Which, by the way, guys, that build had no new features for testing. It was...
Well, the hope is that people like Raphael or The Walking Cat or somebody will take a look at this build and they'll find some stuff in there because, whatever. Although... I think the build number is just a 16.3 something. Isn't it the same as the current?
It was like 8. It's right around the same series. Because as soon as this went out, Rich Woods tweeted it. That he's like, does this mean that 19H2 is going to have a higher build number than what we're seeing?
Than 20H2. Everything there is so screwed up. I don't appreciate the opacity, I guess, for lack of a better term. Like, throw us a bone, guys. Like, you're communicating to the people who have said they want to test the new stuff and they want to know what's going on, and you're just dangling stuff over our heads. And by the way, if the secret is because, I don't know, there's a gaming conference in March or there's a Microsoft Developer Content Conference, sorry, in May, and this is going to be the big reveal, then why can't you just wait those 2 months or one month or whatever it is? Why do this? What is the point of this?
Yeah, they could have just kept releasing 19H1 builds until then.
Listen, if Microsoft made an announcement and said, you know what, we've heard the feedback from our users across the board. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes what we're doing, which would be the feedback, by the way. We're going to drop this thing. We're going to push this thing back. We're going to make sure it's the highest quality release we can possibly make. We learned from our mistakes last year. We're not going to do that again. And then we're going to do 20H1 next. If they had just said that, I would have stood up and applauded.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they actually said, oh, 19H2 is coming too. Don't worry about that. And it's like, guys, seriously.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. That's all.
It's weird too. And
yeah.
I'm sure we'll figure it all out eventually here, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Well, somebody I'm sure right now is looking at this build and comparing it to the Fast Ring build and seeing whatever little, you know, there'll be a reference to Windows Core OS or some stupid thing like that somewhere or whatever it is. My knee-jerk reaction to this is not what all the stuff I just said. It was similar to what you said earlier, which is that this suggests to me that 20H1 is a major release with major fundamental changes. I have no... Well, that's not true. I do have some speculation about what those might be. Maybe it's related to the dual screen stuff we've seen, the folding screen stuff we've seen, the different form factors, the offshoot Chrome OS, whatever it's called, like system. Maybe this is part of that. Maybe. You know, that was my knee-jerk reaction. Like that. But most generally, that this is, it's obviously a major release. They literally said we need more time to test this stuff. Maybe it will finally have sets. Maybe that's what this is. I know.
Well, here, I'll tell you what. You start holding your breath, and I'll let you know when you can breathe again.
Yeah, let me know when sets is in another build, please. Yeah.
That's,
I will say, sort of supporting your belief, one of your beliefs is a possibility, that 19H1 is shaping up to be a kind of a big update in the scope of Windows 10 updates, right? They do avoid the what I used to call nonsense features, right, which they added to previous versions of Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
But there's actually a lot of stuff in there, and it's not and there is a lot of fit and finish and quality work and all that. But the previous two versions of Windows 10 were pretty much just that, right?
Yeah.
Each one of them had something. I mean, obviously, there's some whatever feature that comes in every version, but this one is stacking up as a pretty big release overall, and that supports the notion that maybe these spring updates will be the big ones, and the other ones
It makes sense for the spring to be the big update, because again, where are they supporting enterprise? 30 months fall. Why would they?
The current schedule makes no sense.
Oh, yeah, well, there's that.
It makes no sense, and by the way, even if you want to make the argument that there should be two releases a year for some reason. Releasing something for October guarantees that thing will not be on the computers that ship out to stores in time for Christmas. It guarantees it.
Mm-hmm.
And that guarantees that people who buy new computers at that time will then have to go through the terribleness of installing a major Windows update sometime over the holidays or right after the holidays. That's stupid.
Yeah.
It's just the worst possible timing.
Yeah. Gardner Von Holt in the chat room actually makes a good point. He says Apple does it pretty well with they announce a product at WWDC.
Yeah.
They do insider testing, insider builds all the way up until the fall, and then they're done. And then
not exactly. Apple releases a set of minor updates after that major iOS release, right?
True.
Most of it is fit and finish.
Yep.
Sometimes it will be the completion of a feature that shipped maybe in beta form. Earlier with the original release or didn't make the original release. But for the most part, yes, you get one major iOS update a year. All iOS updates require a reboot. On a phone, that's not a huge inconvenience, honestly. It happens pretty quickly. You can do work while it's, installing other than the offline part. But yeah, I agree that, granted, it's a simpler system probably in many ways than Windows is. I know it's based on an old thing just like Windows is, but I mean, the system itself is a lot more streamlined. We know they want to copy Apple. They know they want this model. They know they want Windows to be like iOS. Well, why do you do that part of it like iOS? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a single business customer in the world that has ever gone to Microsoft and said, you know, I really like Windows, but the problem is I don't have to update it enough? You know? It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Other things that aren't being kept secret anymore. This is all of Samsung's wares for a while. We got a new watch coming. We got some AirBud, AirPod looking things up there. A little fitness tracker down here.
That was a pretty good play of words, by the way.
What's that?
You may not even realize you did that, but all of Samsung's wares. That's pretty good, because those are literally wearables.
Yep.
And they're also wares.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I've been holding that one in for a couple of days.
I just wanted you to know that.
No, I appreciate you taking the time to call out my puns.
I appreciate a good segue, and I appreciate a good pun, and that had both.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, what separates the men from the boys when it comes to podcasting.
Right.
Oddly enough, I keep getting warnings on my computer, as you can see from here.
Yeah.
We'll see how this plays out.
Is this a good time to install Windows?
I don't know.
No?
It's this,
okay, here we go.
I keep seeing high CPU usage, which
is
pretty incredible, because right now this is only two people. It's the box is a 6700K. Like, it's not like it's underpowered by any means.
Right.
But you know, if this thing all turns out post production to be terrible,
that's why we need Windows Lite. Just the idea is so ludicrous. It's
Yeah, I'll be curious to see how that. I bet we see that at Build, and that's the thing is 19. I can't imagine that 19H2 is related to Windows Lite. That would be. Is everything right. Everything right. I'd heard is that all the good people building Windows went to Windows Lite, and so
but, you know. Really great. Yeah. All right. Thanks. I guess it's like, what's that religious thing? Left Behind. You know, like where the guys who got left behind.
No child left.
You know, we're all sitting there like,
oh.
What's going on with the Windows? Look, it's possible whatever the system is, they split, you know, it split off some time ago and it's unconnected. I mean, who knows?
That's what I would think.
They love joint development, right?
Oh, yes.
Even today, I guarantee you, I didn't actually see this, but until very recently, certainly, and probably literally yesterday, when they put up a blog post about Windows 10 Insider Preview, they say for PC. As if there are other things that they're releasing previews for, like the phone version or, you know, like I think they like to maintain the dream that this is some kind of an incredible cross-platform thing. They talk about devices, not about PCs, as if there is a device on Earth running Windows 10 that isn't actually just a PC. You know, it's crazy. Everything they do is crazy. What's going on over there?
Yeah, we should fly up there and straighten them out.
Somebody needs to rattle that cage. See what falls out.
Do we really want to know what falls out? Because that's I think My People, Groove Music Maker, a couple other things would fall at the bottom of that. And
yes, and Sets.
And Sets.
Is Sets going to be compatible with Groove? Oh, boy.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Oh. I wish I wasn't so stuck on Chrome. I'm looking at the Opera.
Yeah, it's pretty, right?
It does. It looks good.
It does look good, and I think it does.
Like, it looks, I should give it a go, but the problem is that everything just works in Chrome, including Edge apparently soon. And
yeah, these things don't stick. That's the problem. They get excited, and you're like, oh, okay, there's that one thing. This happened to me, see if I can bring this up. Yeah, I've been using DuckDuckGo, right? That's my search engine, and it's configured in Chrome, so every time I install Chrome, DuckDuckGo comes up, and on any PC, and it's just there, and it's fine. And day to day, it kind of works. The one major thing that I found that is better in DuckDuckGo than in Google Search is right from the search results, I can right click download images. You remember Google turned that off because, you know, privacy violation, some baloney about intellectual property or something. No, whatever it was. I mean, for good reasons, obviously. But DuckDuckGo has not turned that off. It's just handier for me. but every once in a while, like, I can't find something really obvious. It doesn't respect. Like, you know, you put quotes around something that you want to do a search, so it's like that exact search, and it in Google that includes capitalization. And so there was a technology I wanted to look up to make sure I got the date right called WinG, which was the predecessor to DirectX. It was released in 1994. It was a set of developer APIs to put gaming stuff into Windows. And man, it was coming up with stuff like X-Wing for Windows, different like games. So I went to Google, exact same search. First thing, Wikipedia entry for WinG. And that happens sometimes, and that's what the Opera experience would be like, right? You look at it, you get excited for a little while, you're like, this is going to work fine. And every once in a while, you run into this little thing where you're like, it's not really the same. I don't know. You kind of just go crawling back,
Yeah, no, that is exactly the problem. The bigger issue, too, is people are recommending the chat room Firefox, which I have installed and I used for a while. The problem is it's not necessarily just Chrome. The challenge becomes using 1Password, and then you have things like Grammarly, and then you have all this.
Well, those are there. I mean,
but the integration isn't always at the same level as it is with Chrome.
Yeah,
which is the issue.
I did by virtue of the fact that I have switched to an email application, and can use the calendar application that's built into Windows, and can use the Twitter Windows Store or Microsoft Store app instead of the web version. I have actually decreased my dependency on Chrome because I'm not using any Chrome web apps as discrete applications like I did before. And that makes me a little more mobile, which I kind of like, right? So if I wanted to switch to Opera or Firefox or whatever, it should be pretty straightforward, right? Those things are on mobile. They do sync across mobile to PC. I can get my passwords up there. I can do all that stuff. I still haven't done it, by the way. I still use Chrome. Like, the thing about Chrome is it's not just the one thing. It's like it's all the things. Yeah.
And see, you just hit on another point that I even forgot about is that I use TweetDeck in just a Chrome wrapper, web wrapper, and then I also use Google Calendar in the same way. Mm-hmm. And so even if I have Firefox up and running, if I click a link in those opens Chrome.
Yeah.
And you can't, if you could create those same experiences with Firefox, it would make it a lot easier, but you can't.
Yeah, right. And they need to get on that, by the way.
That's the one thing that I can see. Because when the new Edge comes out, I'll happily try it, because I'm assuming that it's going to be very good. I mean, it's running the same engine. But the challenge, again, will be, is does it have that feature where I can create those, they're not PWAs, but a PWA-like experience with them.
Right. Right. It's a shortcut that acts like an app that has a plain wrapper instead of the browser window. And PWAs can be installed that way if you have one, like the Twitter app works that way. Them not doing that makes them kind of uninteresting to me. I'd have to go and look. Isn't Opera based on Chromium?
That I don't know.
I think it might be. I think it is. That might be an interesting test of that. I know that if you use like Brave, for example, which is based on Chromium, you get a lot of the same stuff from Chrome, like the developer tools, the F12 stuff looks exact. It's the same because it is literally the same.
I haven't looked at Brave in a while. That might be an interesting.
It's a little, they don't do mobile sync yet, so it's not elegant mobile sync anyway. They don't have the notion of they do have accounts, I'm sorry, but you can't just sign on a mobile, get all your passwords and sites or your favorites or whatever.
Yeah.
Bookmarks, I guess we call them.
Well, for now, we'll stay clutched in the pearls of...
Yeah. I keep looking. I keep wondering. I mean, I do the same thing. I saw the Opera thing and I was like, maybe.
It looks nice. That's how
I'm supposed to look. Yeah, it does look nice. It does. I think Firefox looks nice now, too. I mean...
Yeah.
And like you said, Edge, when they make that switch, I'm going to be very interested to see what that's like. Obviously, using the browser that ships with the OS is ideal. I mean, if it could make sense, that would be great.
It would be. Hopefully the browser's great. And they're not... My biggest concern, which I think they will be able to avoid, is that, they come out with this new browser based on Chromium. Are they going to be how many years behind everyone else? Or are they going to be able to quickly build up all the feature set that's needed on top of that to make it?
It just occurred. What if the 20H1 thing is related to Edge, right? We know that Edge is going to be delivered outside of Windows. I mean, obviously, a version of it will come with whatever version of Windows 10, but presumably this thing will be updated on Chrome schedule, which is like every 6 weeks.
So here's why I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
Just because we already know the new Edge is going to be delivered outside of Windows 10. It's just you just download it.
No, but that's why this makes sense. Effectively, they're probably going to have to make changes to Windows to accommodate that. Edge now benefits from this deep integration with the operating system, of the operating system, is serviced with the operating system. Maybe what they've looked at is what it means to strip that thing out. And they've figured out that we need to make some changes here. You know, because there's a new model. Yeah. Like I have to make stuff up here, but like the store apps that are based on the Edge HTML stuff, right? Those kind of continue forward. So if you have an existing app that uses that, that's going to continue in Windows 10, and you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to update your app. And now, ideally, over time, you might update your app to support this new thing, but those things are going to have to be there concurrently. The new version is something that they haven't made yet, and it's not in there yet. And maybe they have to have a new model where they can have both side by side. And this is, requiring them to do things differently.
So I would agree. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I think you're wrong. It's speculative. It's guesswork because we don't know. The only reason why I think that may not be accurate is because they've already announced the Chrome Edge thing. So why would they?
I don't think they knew what they were doing when they announced it. I really don't. You got to remember, they announced this thing and they were like, yeah, we're hoping to talk to Google someday about this. I hope they're okay with it. This is like a fly-by-the-seat of your pants kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it very well could be. It just seems like they've already announced all the pieces. Why would they keep this behind closed doors? But stranger things have happened.
It's mid-February. We have not heard a peep from these guys. I think we all sort of agreed that we expected to see something in January, something, anything, like even a basic downloadable, nothing shell application. I don't, maybe they underestimated the technical requirements of this change.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will find out. Time will tell.
If 2021 is the first time we're going to see this in Windows.
Whoa.
What's going to happen to the existing Edge in the meantime? Is this just going to sit there?
Let me say it this way. I was told by somebody at the company that their plan was to have that Chromium Edge finished up by the end of 2019. So if it's going to ship in a new build of Windows, 20H1 is probably when it's going to arrive.
Is in fact the first time it could arrive.
Exactly. Default browser.
That's exactly right. Yep. Yep.
If only there was a way just to tell us.
They should start blogging a little bit. Maybe they could have some way they could communicate to people in a beta program of some kind. It's just an idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Get anything else for today, Mr. Therat?
Not really. If you're a premium subscriber, I'll be doing Ask Paul this afternoon. I usually try to get that done before lunch, but I had some other stuff I needed to finish up first. So I will do that today, but it will be later today. Nope. What about you?
I will say that the feedback so far, if you haven't checked it out yet, the Beneath the Surface first chapter commentary has actually been pretty good. People really, really liked it. And so if you haven't checked that out, it's on the site. And we'll be doing more of that probably about every other week, roughly, something like that.
Okay.
And people seem to like it. So,
yeah, I'll do what I did. The first one was easy. Obviously, it's kind of a short chapter, but I think what I'll do each time is, I take notes as I go and just little things that I think, we can kind of expand on what's in there and discuss certain things further, whatever. It's kind of an interesting thing to do.
Yep. So if you're interested in joining Paul and Brad Book Club, you can do that. And
right. The next Oprah.
Yeah. All right, folks. That wraps it up for this week. Hopefully you had a wonderful week. We will be back next week. And have yourselves a good weekend. And we'll catch you right back here next time.